It's January 25th, 2017, Masoret. So we're going to be discussing an article that was written by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. He's, I think he's sometimes referred to as Lord Jonathan Sacks, because that was his title in England. He was the chief rabbi of England, and he's a very prolific writer on Torah subjects. Now, one of his books deals with the Parsha of the Week. It's called Covenant and Conversation. Now, somebody brought to my attention an explanation that he had given in one of the articles. It was on Vayigash, I believe. And he had a very, I guess you want to use the word original or unique, explanation for a problem. Now we're going to review the article. The basic problem with regard to the story of Yosef and the brothers, the question that he raises is a classic question, which the commentators deal with, the Ramban deals with this question. It's a good question, and that is that why is it that when Yosef was sold to Egypt, that he never sought to get in touch with his father to let him know that he was alive and basically he was well, alive and well, or whatever. I don't know if there would be any purpose beyond that, if his father could then, perhaps his father could help him. But that's not the basis of the question. The basis of the question is one of compassion and kibud av, respect for one's father. That is, it presumes, and I think we have a right to presume, that Yosef would have been aware that his father would be in agony because he had left that day at his father's behest to go and check on his brothers, bring back a report to him. And whatever the story, we don't know how much Yosef knew of the brothers' plan. That is, he knew that they had taken away his coat. Whether he knew that they were going to, dip it in the blood of the animal and, deceive their father that Yosef had been killed or something. He definitely knew that the brothers would not come back and tell Yaakov what they did. That he knew. He knew that there would be a cover-up. So you could use your imagination. They could make up any kind of story. They could even say that they never... in point of fact, they sent back the coat, which was bloodied and torn. But let's assume that Yosef really didn't know that. Whatever it is, if he thought into the matter about what the brothers told Yaakov, I mean, they could have come back and said that they never saw Yosef. I'm not even sure. Oh, I think we one time discussed it, why the brothers agreed on that particular strategy to make it appear that he had been killed. But at all events, he had to know that Yaakov was in a terrible state, that he didn't know what happened to Yosef. And definitely would have to be afraid that Yosef was dead or he had been kidnapped or whatever. Therefore, he had to have been in a state of agony, any parent. Like we said, if the worst ordeal is when the child is MIA, missing in action, and they don't know his fate. So common decency, kibud av, and so on and so forth, would require that Yosef should get in touch with him. Now, then the question arises, could he have gotten in touch with him? So Rabbi Sacks in the article grants that See, we're dealing over here with, there's always going to be an element of speculation because the Torah doesn't record a lot of these things. So, for example, at what point in time did he have the ability to get in touch with him? At the very least, when he became the ruler of Egypt. That you can't contest because he had absolute power in Egypt. And he definitely had the power to send his own messengers, direct them to, you know, the place where the family lived with the message. Could he have done that before? That's speculation. I maintain that it's feasible to say that when he was in the house of Potiphar, because Potiphar was a significant individual, and he had ties to the, you know, political leadership and so forth, and Yosef was not just an ordinary slave. Yeah, if he was just an ordinary slave, so he has no contacts, and there's no way, it's not like today, you send a letter. At least I don't think. But once he became significant, and Potiphar entrusted him with all of the control over everything that was in his house, I believe that at that point, he could have made a request to send a messenger to his father. But that, you want to argue, there's no point, there's really no point in arguing that. It doesn't make any difference. Since we all agree that there did come a point when he certainly had the ability to send a message. So the question arises, why didn't he do that? It would seem that would be a very
good question, Ryan.
Yes, being raised from a practical standpoint, how expensive such a thing would have been to send a messenger at that time. Certainly, when he was the ruler, I can't imagine that it would have been prohibitive. First of all, there are people, there are caravans that are going and so forth, as we saw. And he, if he needed to, he could have gotten Paro's permission. But he himself, as the ruler, we can imagine, I mean, he had a good salary, if you want to put it in those terms. And he would have spent everything. He would have done everything he could. Under a normal situation, it would have been obligatory upon him. And you see his tremendous love for his father when he came down to Egypt. Finally, that I don't think that that's the explanation. It simply was too expensive. I find that it's, again, you want to make the case, you can make the case. We don't have the facts, but we have to apply a certain type of reasonableness and logic. And I maybe, as I said, even when he was in Potiphar's house, arrangements could have been made due to the fact that there were caravans traveling from, even in those days, people traveled, whether it was business, caravans. As we see, the caravan of the Ishmaelites who were destined for Egypt. So you had caravans going back, passing through that land. So to make a detour and get him, I definitely think it was possible. But as I said, once he became the ruler, then it's hard to imagine that it wasn't feasible because of it was simply too expensive. I want to make it clear, in these types of things, if you have that conviction, and it's not unreasonable, I'm not saying it's unreasonable, but I would regard that as kind of far-fetched. So we're going to have to proceed with the assumption, that's clearly the assumption of the Ramban and all of the other commentators that raised the question, that it was definitely doable. So then the question arises, not to do so would seem to be really virtually cruel. I mean, you know, your father is suffering. How can you not get back to him? What I want to do is to review the thesis, so to speak, of Rabbi Sacks and analyze it. After that, we'll try to give our own explanation, and we have given explanations in the past. But I want to review what he says. So now what he's saying is, it seems like he's giving something which is new and unique, and I would even say a daring type of a bold, very bold type of an explanation. All that is fine. I like that part of it. So he says, well, after setting up the question, and I'll do some reading from his from the article that we have over here. So he says, Joseph knew how much his father loved him. He must have known how much their separation grieved him. He did not know, could not know, what Jacob thought had happened to him. Okay, I agree. But this surely he knew, that it was his duty to communicate with him when the opportunity arose, to tell his father that he was alive and well. Why then did he not? The following explanation is a tantalizing possibility. So, by telling us that, I agree, for using the word possibility, because he's not, that's the correct approach. He's not stating it that, like, he solved the problem mathematically, and it's definitely, you have to accept it. He's admitting it's a possibility, and he's going to put it together. And I would agree with his use of the word tantalizing, because it's off the beaten track, I would say. It's kind of not conventional. It's not conventional. So, okay, I'm interested. Let's hear. Okay, so basically, I think his entire thesis, and you've read the article, we'll be reading parts of it. I don't want to make a mistake in my understanding of what he said and then criticize it. If that's not what he means, if I'm getting what he means wrong, then obviously any criticism would be out of place. So the first thing you need to do in a case like this is make sure you got what he's saying. Now, once it's clear that this is what he's saying, then we can analyze it. So it seems to me, having read the article, that what's unique and what's tantalizing is his suggestion. I would say it's even revolutionary in this context of Chumash, because I don't think anybody else looks at it that way, was that after he contemplated the matter, which is true, after he was sold into slavery, he had plenty of time to think things over and review things, then he came to a conclusion. I guess the issue being, why did Yaakov put him in jeopardy? Which is true. It's a good question that we have to explain. But the point of the matter is that it was Yaakov who put him in trouble. Yaakov put him in jeopardy by his seemingly offhand instruction that he go out that day and see, you know, behold, your brothers are shepherding the sheep in Shechem. Go and see them. I'm going to send you to them. But basically, we don't really know what was so significant, why he sent Yosef and all that. There's not that much explanation that's given. So it kind of seems matter of fact. But the question can be raised. Why did he put him in that situation? So Yosef agreed. Yosef agreed, and in fact, as we see, he went to Shechem and they weren't there, and then it doesn't seem that Yosef didn't protest that I can't do that, they'll kill me. He didn't protest. He went. Not only that, but once he could have made a case, I went to Shechem, they weren't there, and he came back home, but he didn't do that because he had that encounter with that man who supposedly was an angel. I mean, according to Rashi. And he told him that they're in Dothan. So he went to Dothan. Now, what Rabbi Sacks is suggesting is really, in my opinion, is a amazing kind of an idea. And that is that he came to the conclusion that Yaakov, in point of fact, actually hated him. Maybe the word...
Even if he
Maybe the word hated him is too strong, but I think if you read what Rabbi Sacks says, it's pretty close. Basically, he's making the case that Yaakov, at least in Yosef's mind, when Yosef reviewed the situation, came to the conclusion, well, the big question is, why would his father put him in such danger? Why would his father send him to a place of such danger? And according to Rabbi Sacks, he came to the conclusion that it can only be because his father was very angry at him. That's what I think is really, I guess, radical about this, that he is imputing to Yaakov that Yaakov basically put him in a position where great harm would come to him. And now in fact, if that's the case, then Yaakov would be responsible for his death. Even though we know that that's not the case. He's trying to interpret the way Yosef would have looked at it. Okay, so bear with me. I want to read some certain amount from his text. Okay, so just to make sure that we're being fair here. So, he says, the story of Yosef's descent into slavery and exile began when his father sent him alone to see how the brothers were faring. Okay, then he quotes from the Chumash. Then, again to Rabbi Sacks, what does the narrative tell us immediately prior to this episode? It tells us about the second of Yosef's dreams. Okay, and, the first one was about the sheaves. The second one was the sun and the moon and the 11 stars. So the brothers were angry. The brothers were angry when he told them the first dream. And then the second dream, he told it to his father as well as his brothers. And his father rebuked him. See, this becomes a major factor to him. How is he going to show that Yaakov was angry at him? So he said, what is this dream that you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you? His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Okay, so what he's going to do now, I mean, this is pretty much the only piece of evidence. He's going to try and use this to show, I guess what he means is that there was a complete transformation of Yaakov. Bear in mind that he was the favorite, that Yosef was the favorite. And that was part of the problem, that he had displayed his favoritism to Yosef. So then, says Rabbi Sacks, immediately afterwards we read of Jacob sending Joseph alone to his brothers. It was there at that meeting far from home that they plotted to kill him, lowered him into a pit, and eventually sold him as a slave. Joseph had many years to reflect on that episode. That his brothers were hostile to him, he knew. But surely Jacob knew this as well. Okay, so you see, so he's starting to put the pieces to solve the crime. So you have to assume that Yaakov was aware of the hatred of the brothers to Yosef. In which case, why did he send Yosef to them? Did Jacob not contemplate the possibility that they might do him harm? Did he not know the dangers of sibling rivalry? Did he not at least contemplate the possibility that by sending Joseph to them, he was risking Joseph's life? Okay, that sounds pretty convincing. These are good questions. Continuing, no one knew this better from personal experience. Recall that Jacob himself had been forced to leave home because his brother Esav threatened to kill him once he discovered that Jacob had taken his blessings. Recall, too, that when Jacob was about to meet Esav again, after an interval of 22 years, he was in, quote, great fear and distress, believing that his brother would try to kill him. That fear provoked one of the great crises of Jacob's life. So Jacob knew better than anyone else in Genesis that hate can lead to killing, that sibling rivalry carries with it the risk of fratricide. I don't see the question, the comparison basically, that is because of the fact that he himself had experienced the hatred of a brother, and ultimately he had to run away because his brother sought to kill him. I don't see him there, therefore, now looking upon the situation with Yosef and his brothers seeing the same thing. I don't see that at all. That's a good question. Well, we're going to leave that as a question. But I still do not see...
I don't see that so much, though.
First of all, Esav was a Russia. And secondly, the situation wasn't a case of rivalry. The issue between Yaakov and Esav wasn't a case of sibling rivalry. That was a case and where he had done something which certainly Esav viewed as being extremely unjust and hostile. He stole the brachas. So that even so, Yaakov would not on his own have come to that conclusion. As a result of the fact that he stole the brachos and so forth, so Yaakov might have known that he wouldn't be happy and he'd be upset with him, but he didn't know that he would kill him. The only reason he left is because Rivka, Yaakov didn't know it either. I'm sorry, Yitzchak did not know it either. It was because Rivka. And she had Ruach HaKodesh, whatever. I mean, she knew, or she discovered.
Yeah, but then she told
him.
Right.
But on his own.
Okay, so the point, okay.
So you could ask a question, if you want. At most, you could say, well, listen, he himself had some experience with these things. And that's a legitimate question, which we'll come back to. Is why did Yaakov act this way? Why did he send them out there? Why wasn't he more concerned? Fine, that's just a question. But bear in mind that he's going further and he's coming to the conclusion that he deliberately did it. He wanted him to be put in danger. That's...
No.
I don't think that, again, well, I don't think that that's reasonable, that there's any indication of that, that it's reasonable for Yosef to have thought that way, because they had the closest relationship. If you want, we can go through the other cases over here. But there's no reason why Yosef would have concluded that his father deliberately wanted to put him in jeopardy. All the other cases, like case with Esav and so forth, were cases where, I mean, he had done serious things to them that would cause Esav, for example, to feel hurt and anger. But all you have over here is the fact that he rebuked him for a dream. Because do you think that Yosef had experienced that closeness? In fact, you know, the Rashi says that they, you know, that it says he saw the golem. He saw the wagons that Yosef had sent. And it's a reference to Egla Rufa. And that was the last thing they had studied together. Which indicates that they studied together and they kept studying together. All you have, and in fact, he didn't pronounce anything against Yosef. After the second dream... That's another issue, that Yaakov clearly was not alert, was not in tune with the full extent of the hatred of the brothers. He wasn't aware of that. But he did begin to see that that was dangerous for Yosef to talk that way. So he sought to rebuke him. It was kind of a mild rebuke. And that's what we see. Too little, too late.
Right.
But, excuse me, where do you see...
I don't think that Yaakov actually meant to pin.
We have to assume, how would it be sensible for Yosef to think that way? Would it be sensible for Yosef to come to the conclusion that my father deliberately... There's no indication that Yaakov was angry at him, other than he rebuked him. And after that, they were still together because he sent him out on that day... you know, it would appear that nothing, there was no breach in the relationship. He didn't take away the special coat and so on and so forth. There was no indication at all. It's basically, he says he guarded the matter. All right, maybe Yosef didn't know that he guarded the matter. But merely because he had a dream, and it wasn't even for having the dream, but that he was careless. And that this could arouse, I mean, as far as Yaakov is concerned, that's not a good thing. That because you're going to arouse jealousy and hostility, and it could have, not that necessarily that somebody will get killed here, but that's going to break apart the family. But I don't see why Yosef would, to come to that conclusion, that Yosef, knowing how his father loved him and knowing the relationship and everything, would come to the conclusion that his father deliberately sent him out there, knowing that it was Daniel. Let's ask a different question. So why did Yosef, if Yosef regarded that situation of being with the brothers as being such a dangerous situation, so why did he go? I'm saying if Yosef himself was completely blind to it, so why wouldn't he assume that his father was also completely blind to it? Where does he see any indication of a change in his father, such that his father, who loved him the most, that was what. In fact, Chazal criticize him for displaying the favoritism, but they don't criticize him for sending him out there. And the idea, to me, it seems a preposterous conclusion that he would sit back and say, oh, my father really hates me, and he pretty much knew that what the brothers were going to do. I would say, to the contrary, we have to conclude, but it's also reasonable that Yosef, that is, the idea that Yaakov, so what I'm trying to show is like this, the idea that Yaakov would actually do this is so preposterous that it makes it almost impossible to attribute. Yosef was very smart, and he was there, and he knew, and he didn't see any signs of anger from his father. It's just the rebuke. The fact that his father rebuked him because he spoke the dreams, that's so from there you're going to make the leap that Yosef, he rebuked me, so therefore he must have sent me. And then you have to assume that Yosef thought that he had to know the danger I was getting into. Well, why? Yosef didn't know the danger. Yosef went along with it. He didn't protest. So it's very difficult for me to for Yosef to have had that thought would mean a total distortion of his father. That is to say, merely this is what Yosef would have to be. Then Yosef didn't know Yaakov at all. He knows his father Yaakov is a great, great tzaddik. Now he brings up all the other cases, but we can go through them if you want to bolster his arguments. But you're going to attribute to Yosef that Yosef had such a negative, such a false view of his father. A, who was a great tzaddik. B, who with whom he had the closest relationship. He had tremendous love. Being, because he was Ben Zakunim and all the other factors. Not to mention that he was the first son of his beloved wife Rachel. For Yosef to come to the conclusion that because I told that dream to my father's, he rebuked me, but he transformed all of his feelings. His anger was so great because I had this dream that he put me in jeopardy, and so on and so forth. To me, that's preposterous that Yosef would have such a thought. Say that, then you don't have Yosef anymore. Then what kind of person is Yosef? Is Yosef? You're attributing, that's a flimsy thought about Yaakov. It doesn't make any sense that we, you know, if we look at it. But then you're saying, well, we're not really, the point is not how preposterous it was to attribute that to Yosef. We're saying, but maybe that's how to Yaakov. That it's preposterous to say that if it is preposterous to attribute such a thought, a change of heart to Yaakov, that Yaakov would have such hatred for Yosef merely because he had these dreams, bearing in mind that he was a nar, he was young, he was only... Look, Yosef had brought back bad reports to his father. That didn't cause Yaakov to discard him, reject him. In spite of that, he loved him. So how could Yosef have thought that way about his father? How could he have come to such a conclusion? That just like we come to the conclusion, and looking back, he had an awakening. Yosef himself had an awakening. He underestimated the extent of the brother's anger. I would say that if Yosef was aware that he was walking into danger, he didn't have to listen to his father. Because obviously you don't listen to your father if he's telling you to put your life in jeopardy. There's no kibbutz av.
Right, except that, right.
Saying that just like Yosef did not know, so too Yaakov did not know. So when he looks back and he realizes that he was naive, he would also have to assume that his father didn't know. Well, why would my father do that? What's that?
I think the flimsy part of this is the dream. Okay, whether or not...
You say that Yosef had that thought, that I can't understand why my father put me in a situation where I would have been killed. So then Rabbi Sachs's conclusion becomes more reasonable. I don't know if something happened, he changed his whole thing, wanted me out of the way. For Yosef to come to that conclusion, I'm saying, is absurd. Because there's no basis for him to think that way. The only thing you have is that he rebuked him for the dream. Oh, so then when Joseph said, why did my father put me in that situation? So, for the same reason I went into the situation. Just like I didn't know, he didn't know either. How are we supposed to know how the brothers really felt? The brothers kept that hidden. The brothers never gave any indication that their feelings were such that they were prepared to kill Yosef. Yaakov had no idea about that, and neither did Yosef. So I'm saying, to come to the conclusion, which I think is the linchpin, everything revolves around that, for Yosef, to say that Yosef came to that conclusion, that his father really was angry with him, not just angry with him, that angry at him to the point where he wanted him eliminated? How can you say anything like that? I mean, just like we would never say that about Yaakov, okay, but still, even in Yosef's perspective, why would he come to that conclusion? When there's a much more obvious conclusion, and that is that he made the same mistake I did, where he was naive. He loved me, and because he favored me, he was blinded to the damage that it caused. That's clear. And that is the conclusion that I'm sure Yosef came to, that his father had nothing to do with this. And I don't know, we could ask why he sent them out there in the first place. But he might have had a reason, bring back a report and so on and so forth. I mean, the Torah doesn't, sometimes you don't require a deep explanation. I mean, it was a matter-of-fact thing. The brothers had been sent out there, and Yaakov wanted to know if they needed things, supplies, so on and so forth. And he sent Yosef. The fact that there was this tension between them, he didn't think that it's going to lead. He had no idea that it's going to lead to this. And nobody had any idea that it's going to lead to this. So it's much more reasonable to conclude, because for you to say that Yosef came to the conclusion that his father hated him so much that he was prepared to kill him is preposterous. I mean, Yosef is no fool, and there's no evidence for that at all. Where's the evidence? The only evidence you have is that he sent them out there. But he sent them out there because he didn't know. So I get it then that... and then he wants to bring the proof from the speech of Yehuda. That, because it's only from the speech of Yehuda that he finds out how much his father still loved him. Okay. But none of this makes sense to me. Because if he was in any doubt, even if he had a doubt about it, then as soon as the brothers come down, he could have found out. He could have confronted them then. He could have revealed who he was right then. And he could have asked the same questions about his father, you know. He doesn't do that. In other words, he has a chiyuv, he has an obligation of kibud avim. He has an obligation. If it's true that his father is suffering, which is at least a possibility, you know, I mean, according to his thesis, that's it. Yosef dropped the whole thing. He was absolutely convinced that his father hated him, and there was no point. There was no point in getting in touch with him. I think that's ridiculous, because even if he had a doubt, so what? And even if his father was angry with him, he could apologize. It doesn't justify. First of all, that assumption doesn't make any sense to me at all. And B, it doesn't justify not getting in touch. So get in touch, and then you'll see. If it turns out that he sends a message back to Yaakov, that I'm alive and well, and Yaakov says, it doesn't matter, I've disowned you, I don't care, okay. But I mean, that's so far-fetched. And even if it turns out that Yaakov was upset with him, so he can make up to it. I mean, his view of his father was such that there was no reason, even to get in touch with him. That is a tremendous, that's impossible to believe. And as I said, when he has the brothers under his control, he doesn't ask them, what's going on? What happened? Is my father, does he still care about me? Does he want to know if I'm... He doesn't do any of that, but rather he subjects them to, the accusations and so on and so forth.
That's true, but at the beginning...
He didn't reveal himself to them. If you understand why he didn't reveal himself to them and why he subjected them to all of these accusations and so on and so forth, all the moves that he made, those moves will explain why he didn't get in touch with Yaakov. Those moves will explain to you. Therein lies the key. He was very concerned about his father. And when they came down, he asks, how is your father, the old one, and so on and so forth. He was very concerned about Yaakov. And the reason why, the big reason why, he did not get in touch, with him, has to do with the dreams. It has to do with the dreams. I'll give you what the Ramban says. And I think Rabbi Chait added something. But they're intertwined. The Ramban says, because he saw the dreams, that the dreams indicated that they would come down, they would bow to him, and so on and so forth. So he had to wait. He didn't have freedom. He didn't have the freedom to do as he pleased, but rather he had to see to it that the dreams would be fulfilled, and then the family would be reunited. I think Rabbi Chait said in addition, you could put both of these answers together, because the pasuk clearly says that he saw the brothers, he recognized the brothers, and they did not recognize him, and then it says, and he remembered the dreams. And he said to them, you are spies. So the accusation, there's a cause and effect between his accusation that they're spies and remembering the dreams. What does one thing have to do with the other? So Rabbi Chait explained that one dream was about economic power. That was the sheaves, that he would dominate them with economics, because of economics. And the other dream was the sun and the moon and the stars would mean that he would be the leader in terms of the spiritual. And Rabbi Chait said he'd be the, what you call the mashgiach ruchani, the spiritual guide, so to speak. So what he said was, he remembered the dreams, that is, now he recognized the relationship between the two. That is to say that, why were there two dreams? That's because he now saw that the economic power that he would attain over them, that would give him the ability to be the Mashgiach Ruchani. Okay, so now he realized that he had the economic power, and the dream was telling him to use that power in order to be the spiritual guide, which means to effectuate their tshuva by these different things that he did. Because, the premise being that he had, basically, he had no right to do what he did. That is, you can't put another person through these kinds of afflictions and torture in order to bring about, even for good purposes, in order to bring about his tshuva. No one has a right to do that. Except Hashem, of course. But to lock a person up and to threaten them and so on and so forth, the things that he did, and to force him, to force Yaakov to give up Yosef, I'm sorry, Binyamin, okay, who had taken the place of Yosef, to do those things would be beyond the pale. So the only reason he was able to do it was because it was the dream. The dream was from Hashem, and it was true prophecy, and it was giving him the mandate, so to speak, that he needed to do these things. That's why he couldn't. He realized that if he let them, if he revealed himself at that point in time, before they had gone through this entire process, it would have destroyed the entire family. Because if he went and he sent a message to Yaakov, and he told Yaakov what had happened and what the brothers did and so on and so forth, it would have destroyed the entire family. They could not be united until they had gone through this process of tshuva and reconciliation. Once they had gone through that, then he was able to reveal who he was. So, in point of fact, according to this, he could not communicate with his father. Because had he communicated until when the time wasn't ready, before they had gone through this process, and so on, before the dreams and the message of the dreams had been fulfilled, then it would have messed everything up. So therefore, he had no choice. It's not because there's no indication at all that that Yaakov's feelings had changed, or that Yosef believed that the feelings had changed. The only, you know, there's a difference in the other cases. We don't have time now. Then he tries to bring some supports for his position. Maybe we can go through that tomorrow, because I think it's important, because he's making a case and he's bringing down more facts to back it up. We have to see whether logically they work. But as I said, the idea that merely because he had this great relationship with Yaakov, and we do see that it continued even afterwards, because, you know, according to the Midrash anyways, they continued learning together. You know, the last thing they learned was Egla Rufa. So there was nothing, the fact that he rebuked them, you know, what is this dream that you've dreamed? Shall I and your mother and brother come down and bow down to you? To say that because he rebuked Yosef, because Yosef had a dream at the age of 17, so that's enough to change all of his feelings about Yosef? Now, you'll say, well, maybe that's what Yosef thought. But to attribute such a thought to Yosef doesn't make any sense. That's what I'm saying. The only way, I mean, look, you could project any thought you want onto Yosef, but there's got to be a reason, it's got to be a certain reasonableness. There's no indication from any behavior of Yosef, there's no indication from anything that happened that this would be reasonable for Yosef to come to such a conclusion. The only fact we have is that he sent them out to his brothers, which is difficult. Why did he do that? But to say that any reasonable person would come to the, Yosef for sure, would come to the conclusion that he set me up because he wanted me to be killed, what would he be saying about his father? That's impossible. In other words, if he was sitting around with some friends in Egypt, that he made some friends in Egypt, then let's assume they were asking and he was confiding in them what had happened to him and this and that. And then in the course of the story, he would say, I just don't understand. Why did my father send me out on that day? Maybe he wanted me killed. I think assuming they're reasonable people and they had all the information, they say, that's crazy. Your father loves you. That was his mistake, that he displayed his love. But maybe all of his feelings now turned to such anger that he wanted me killed. That's what Yosef thought about his father? That to me just doesn't make any sense. I mean, putting it mildly. So it's tantalizing, but I don't see any basis for it. Even that idea alone, that Yosef would come to the conclusion that his father deliberately set him out there, that means that Yosef regarded his father as a murderer. That's exactly what David was rebuked for when he sent out Uriah. That is, he sent him out to be killed by the sword of the enemies. That was a terrible thing. That's like murder. Now we're going to say that Yosef looked at his father that way, that because he had the dream, his father then was prepared to have him killed indirectly. That's just so preposterous. He would then have sat him down and said, all he did was rebuke him. If he felt that you have to go further than that, he would have spoken, you have him killed. He would have told him, you know, you have to look into yourself. Why did you have such dreams? You have to do tshuva and so on and so forth. But he was content. He thought that this rebuke would be enough. And essentially, the purpose of the rebuke was more for the brothers. He thought, and that's perhaps why he sent them out, to explain Yaakov, that Yaakov did not realize the extent of the hatred of the brothers. And also he felt he rebuked them. And once he rebuked them, he fulfilled his obligation. Now the brothers would be okay. Whatever you want to say as to, we don't have a good explanation as to why Yaakov was not more in tune with the feelings of the brothers. All right, but that we can, you know, we could see. Given his view of his sons, and that, you know, he didn't want to believe. As like Jesse said, they weren't Rishayim, they were Tzaddikim. So they were jealous, or they were angry at him, and so on and so forth. But to go from there to the point that they were going to kill him, that's something that Yaakov didn't see. And as I say, Yosef didn't see that. And in retrospect, when Yosef thought about it, I'm sure that that's the conclusion he came to. That were you just like, I missed that, so too Yaakov missed that. That makes much more sense if you're looking back. And he could have asked himself the question, why didn't I tell Father that I can't go? That's what, when Hashem sent Shmuel to go and anoint David. So Shmuel said, how can I go? The Shema Shol of Harguni. And the Shol will find that, it'll kill me. So in other words, I'm putting my life in jeopardy. He told this to Hashem. So certainly, Yosef could have said, no, I can't do that, they'll kill me. He didn't think to say that. In other words, this was the hidden factor. There was a tremendous hidden factor here in terms of how deep the feelings of the brothers were and that what could emerge. So if I come to that conclusion, Yosef, if I'm Yosef and I come to that conclusion, so then now I'm asking myself the question as to why did Father send me out there? I'm not going to say, oh, because he wanted that to happen to me. Or I'd say, apparently he also. We both did not recognize the severity of the situation.